Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel, as always, joined by Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick on the show today. We got a couple of macro movers. We got the Senate healthcare bill coming out at around 9:30. That's going to affect some stocks, so we're going to talk about the healthcare and biotech potential movers off that. SPLS is on the block again. IBB had a breakout yesterday. We're going to talk about the IBB breakout. Jobless claims, Oracle had earnings, and Dry Ships did another reverse split. So we'll get to all that and more. Our guest will be at 8:35. He is Gil Morales. He's one of our favorites. He's the author of the Gilmo Report and the managing director of Mocha Investors. Joel, how are we doing in the S&Ps right now?
Quiet session here so far. Only 6.5 point range overnight. We're trading down 1.5 here. Back in the 24.30 handle once again. Wednesday's high, not up to 24.40. So we got some room on the upside. But I like my number on the downside much better. That's 24.28. That was yesterday's low, and that is the low in the overnight session. Moving over to the daily crude chart, crude up 23 cents at 42.76. For those who thought 43 was the bottom handle that we'd be holding, nope, we hit 42.26 today earlier in the Globex session. Gold up 7.30, back above 12.50. Silver up 19 cents at 16.56. Dennis, how you doing on this Thursday morning?
Still fighting that cold. Man, these summer colds are killing you. So just a little bit of a nasty cough and feeling under the weather here. But it is what it is. So we got the show must go on here, Joel. So here we are.
Dennis,
we're trading. We're trying to trade here this morning, trying to find you some market movers.
Dennis, I've never heard of a summer cold until you came.
Yeah.
You're the only person I've ever met who has this problem.
It's a Canadian thing.
It must be.
Dennis, before we get into all the market movers and the issues of the day, Linda comes up with an interesting question here. And, of course, we can't give investment advice here. But her daughter-in-law or her daughter owns some Whole Foods stock. And she has options. This thing keeps moving up above the takeout price here. So.
Yeah. We talked about it a few days ago on the show here, and I'll just recap it there for you, Linda. No problem at all, because a lot of people are asking this question there, and if you didn't have a chance to listen to the show a few days ago, you probably missed our answer to this. There's only one reason that a stock is going to trade over its takeout price, and that's the market is speculating that there is the potential for another bidder to come in. Now, that is just market speculation. If, you know, no other bidder comes in and this deal obviously goes through, the takeout price is going to be $42. So in essence, you know, it's your daughter-in-law. In essence, your daughter-in-law will be selling the stock for $42 if no other bidder comes in. If another bidder comes in, anything could happen. So, you know, the speculation is that there's a lot of companies here that are going to be hurt by Amazon coming in and buying Whole Foods. So maybe one of, you know, the competitors comes in and puts a competing bid in there for Whole Foods. Maybe they've been 45, and then maybe Amazon has to go 48. So maybe it gets into a little bit of a bidding war. That's the speculation. Personally, and this is not advice, just my opinion, personally, I don't see it happening, because the way I look at it, if I was one of those competitors, Amazon's coming to get you anyways. So why bother going and buying something you probably don't need just to try to slow Amazon down? Amazon's coming at you. If they don't buy Whole Foods, they're going to be buying something else. So I think, you know, that 42 is probably going to be the end result here. But, you know, funny things happen, and, you know, it could get another competing bid. So you're basically, people who are buying it at 43.26 today are risking $1.26 that there might be a better offer out there.
I look at it from a couple different perspectives. One is from the risk-reward perspective, all right? So if she, the alternative would be to sell her stock out in the open market, right, and not wait for the $42 transition, then she makes that extra $1.16 or wherever it's trading a buck higher. On the other hand, if she does, and I don't even know if she has the right to sell their stock too, because a lot of this stock options are restricted stock, So, you know, if that case, if she sells the stock outright in the market and someone comes in at 45 or 46, obviously she won't be participating in that higher price. That is to agree with you. I mean, I had talked about it, you know, I did too. Sunday night. And I was like, Dennis, start lifting offers in the lower 42 handle.
Handle is not as much risk. Now you're risking $1.26. So I see this as, you know, and you're exactly right. I see this as an option. So right now it's an option. You're paying $1.26 with the possibility of another buyer coming. When it's at 42.05 or 42.10, you're only paying a nickel or a dime for that option because in all likelihood, the stock is going out at 42. So I don't pay $1.26. Would I pay 42.10 or 42.15? Probably. The market right now is paying a little bit more because it's speculating that there, you know, is a higher percent chance than maybe me or you are giving it that there is another potential suitor out there. But, you know, we did see it happen with Straight Path. Completely different story, though. Straight Path was a small little company. AT&T and Verizon was a drop in the bucket for them. So they got into a huge bidding war. The original bid was like at 90 and went off the board like $187. That's not happening here. I mean, this is, you know, a billion-dollar, $14 billion deal. It's a big deal. You know, can Kroger even do it? I don't think so. Could Walmart do it? We were saying this the other day. Yeah, absolutely Walmart could do it. But do they want to do it? I don't think they want to get into this. So I think Walmart's running their own thing. I mean, grocery is a big part of it. But like I said, Amazon's coming to get you no matter what. And David Faber also said on CNBC he doesn't see anything materializing here either. And he thinks 42 is going to be the end result. So that's it. If you sell at 43.26 today, you're basically banking an extra $1.26. If no other suitor comes in, you'll be happy you did it. If another suitor comes in, you might be disappointed because maybe it does go off the board at 45 or 48. But I personally don't see another suitor coming.
And just to go along those lines, you know, maybe Monday, you know, if something like this happened, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now it's 4 days, 5 days after the deal's been announced. You think if, you know, someone was either going to try and, you know, goose it to make Amazon pay more. I think, you know, now you're 4 or 5 days away from it. So I think the chance of that diminishes. Also, you know, Nick Shaheen stock replacement theory. If if she sells the stocks, you can buy some, you know, higher calls. But I think there'll probably be a lot of premium in those as well. So I don't know. Just the fact that it hasn't happened Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday.
I think it could take time. I don't know if that. I totally agree with you. No? That, you know, it's been too long. But I just don't think there's another suitor out there. That's my own opinion. Yuri making another point. He's like, what if the deal doesn't close? Well, the deal doesn't close if for whatever reason they jump in here and say, you know, they block it or, you know, something falls apart. Then the stock's worth a hell of a lot less than $42. So that, you know, but I personally don't see that happening either. You know, Whole Foods already said marriage made in heaven. There's no antitrust issues here. I mean, you're talking about a small grocer. That's not happening. There's all kinds of grocery stores out there. So I don't see this deal falling apart. I personally think it's going off the board at $42 a little bit later on. So I think, you know, it's $43.26. But, you know, am I going to short the thing? No, because there's a potential that somebody comes in with a better bid and then I'd be really, my max gain is basically that $1.26. I'm not rating somebody that option. So I'm sitting my hands out here. I would probably be a buyer in the low 42s just because you have that potential. But a 43.26, a little bit too pricey for me.
All right. I hope that helps, Linda. All right.
We're figuring out on our own there, too. So I don't know. Just our opinion here. Obviously, we're not investment advisors, so we can't give actual investment advice.
All right, so let's move on to the morning movers.
It's the earnings here. And you know what? These tech stocks just continue to rumble. I mean, this Oracle report is good, but holy cow, I did not see them tacking on another 11% on Oracle. I'm happy. I own Oracle in my investment portfolio, one that I bought back in the financial crisis at under $10. I think I've averaged in around like $9.50 on Oracle. So
how do you remember all those, man?
You know what? You remember your good ones. Okay. But you know what? No, because when I look at my portfolio, it has, like, so I see it all the time because it has my average cost on there. So I just go down, I go into my portfolio, and there's like 70 holdings there. This is my investment portfolio, not my trading portfolio. And it's got my average cost in there, and I can see, you know, where, you know, my average cost is on everything. So I think Oracle's under $10.
Get out.
Get out what?
Get out of Oracle.
Get out now? 51?
Yeah. Yeah.
All this long? I'm sticking with it.
I don't know about that.
Here. You know what? And okay, so give us the number, Spencer, and then we can jump into the technicals.
89 cents versus 78 cents, 10.892 billion versus 10.45 billion. Q4 total cloud sales up 58% to $1.4 billion.
Stock is obviously flying here. What is this a new all-time high? Because you got to go back to the year 2000. What was the all-time high back during the tech bubble?
And we were talking about this yesterday, Dennis, and because it was bumping up right against it. Going back to the tech bubble, the high was
2000.
46.47, and that's where it was stalling at until this report. You had got up to 46.54 with a 46.33 close. So technically, you know, it was ready for a breakout, and now you get the actual numbers, the actual breakout. Hit 51.80, and, you know, I would say, I'm not going to say the top's in because we're holding up 20 cents away from that, 51.60. So no sellers in yet. I think there could be continued upside if you have a big long position in this. Let this thing just keep floating. Wait for that
night. Maybe chase it up with stops,
stops. I'm talking if you, like, let's say you have some weekly options or something like that. Keep an eye on that pre-market high right before the print, right before the, you know, the 9:30 opening, because sometimes that's a good indicator. But doesn't look on the 15-minute chart here, it doesn't look like it has
climbing.
Any quit. Yeah, no quit.
It was
in
climbing
it.
All night. I tried to actually fade it once, and I actually made 20 cents somehow fading this thing. I think it was like a 50 and a half. I was going to fade around the 50 bucks psychological level, and I was like, you know what? Too much momentum. There was somebody stepping up with 100,000 share bid and another 100,000 share bid. I was like, another at 47, 48, 49. Like, they were coming and buying with two hands. Some institution was coming in big time, and they wanted stock, and then they started getting filled on some. So I don't even think it was a matter of somebody trying to push the price higher. They were like wanting that stock. They were trying to buy like 100,000 shares again and again and again. So, you know, there was just massive buyers, and obviously
they were displaying 100,000.
They were. And that's when you see that, sometimes you wonder, are they just trying to push the price higher? But no, they were starting getting filled on it too. It wasn't like they were like showing it and trying to cancel. They were putting it right in the market. They were hoping to get hit, and then they move it higher and they move it higher, and they kept coming up. With, like, it'd get filled on some of the 100,000, they put a new 100,000 there. I watched it multiple times coming up there. And that's so much, you know, like, you know, people look at a chart and stuff, get so much more information from looking at the time and quotes, you know, and looking what's actual buyers doing out there, looking at your level two quotes, looking at those big buyers stepping into the market. Because, you know what, if I was just looking at a chart, I might just say, oh, well, $50 psychological, and it's going to fade there. Wow, yeah, I see this huge buyer keep stepping up. I was like, he hasn't even got close to filled yet. And if he really wants it, he's going higher. So, you know, reading those quotes, sometimes, you know, the big buyers, and that's the way we used to trade years ago, Joel, you know, just looking where the big buyers, big sellers were. They just don't show their hands like that anymore, the big institutions, though. But when they do, there's still an opportunity for you as a tape reader and you as a quote reader to make some money off of that information.
What was that one railroad that you got plowed in not too long ago?
Plowed in. Thanks. I got run over and then followed the rail.
What was that?
Was it CSX?
Was it CSX?
I feel like it was CSX. I feel like CSX gets me once a year.
Yeah.
It was
news.
You know, something was happening. I got hit. Oh, I hit. Yeah, it was CSX. I lost like $3 or $4, and it was like in a hurry. I was trying to fade as it was going up. And then it was just skipping handles, and there was, like, nothing in there. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, now I'm just dead. And, you know, how do you let something go 4 points against you? Well, after hours, that can happen, like, 20 seconds. So, you know, so that's the one thing bad, you know, after hours trading, obviously, high risk, high return, but high risk as well. And sometimes you're going to get hit, and sometimes you're not going to be able to get out. You know, you try to limit your losses as much as you can. Sometimes there's just nothing there. And, I mean, it's, you know, all of a sudden, boom, you know, you're underwater, and you're trying, you're scrambling for cover, and you know you're wrong. But, you know, everybody else knows they're wrong, too, and everybody's trying to grab every offer in sight.
Yeah. Now, sorry to bring that up, Dennis. I won't bring
you
up.
You got to make fun of me every once in a while.
I won't bring up
especially
the Janet.
Kick me when I'm down. Got the bad cold, coughing and everything. Kick me when I'm down, Joel.
And I won't bring up the Janice Fund trade either.
No, stop picking on me. Don't more pick on Dennis Thursday here. Let's go on Carnival Cruise Lines. We'll pick on Carnival Cruise Lines. It's trading down here. It was actually getting bit up last night. I was up over $1, so somebody was leaning the wrong way on this one because it's actually trading down here now. Give us a report here, CCL. Spencer.
Wait, I actually don't see it. Are they out right now?
Did they not come out yet?
I don't think they're out yet. Let me double check, but I don't think they're out.
It's bouncing around like it's traded. Maybe you're right. I didn't even look. I just saw it trading down here now $1, so that's interesting. So chat if you were missed CCL. We'll come back to it. So let's go over to Accenture, because I'm pretty sure Accenture is out because I just watched it tank. ACN.
Yeah, ACN is out there. Thank you, Dennis. They reported here Q2 EPS of $1.40, or Q3 EPS, excuse me, $1.52, which was the estimate, and revenue of $8.867 billion versus an $8.83 billion estimate there. So they beat on the revenue, and they met the estimate on the EPS.
And Accenture was trading up substantially last night, too. People are buying these things ahead of the reports. They're just thinking every tech stock's going to go. This thing just traded 131.5 last night. I honestly thought about shorting, and then I'm like, I don't know, maybe this guy knows something or something because he's buying it up $4 after hours. Anyways, didn't know anything because the stock is tanking now. So 131.5 last night. Congratulations to who sold that. But stock is obviously down now, down $3.5, trading at 123.81. Joel, break down the technicals on ACN.
Only two daily lows here in a 2350 area from May 31st to June 1. So one potential support area. If the decline continues, you got a trio of lows at the 122.40 area. A quad of lows at the 122.30 area. And then if you're really holding out, you know, really bearish and you think you can, you know, get a nice whole number like 120.30, that's your May 24th low. So there's a couple daily levels. I usually like when I'm looking at something on the pre-market, I usually like to see more than, you know, one or two lows there before you really expect some support. But right now we're back at the May low, and under that I'm looking at the lower 122. So it's called 122.40, a 3-star here if the decline continues.
Just in the chat, we'll leave the earnings. We'll come back. I do not see Carnival either, so I think Carnival hasn't broken yet. So we'll come back to that when we do get that earnings report there. Just in the chat, it was something I had on my show to talk about too. B. Morris saying, anyone catch that flash crash yesterday in Ethereum? We're talking the cryptocurrency Ethereum. This thing went yesterday, had a flash crash. So how does these things happen? This means there's no orders on the books or no orders on whatever exchange or however these things trade off exchange. I don't know how the hell they do it. Anyways, the price went from $300 to $13 and then came all the way back, you know, very quickly, all in a flash. That's why they call it a flash crash. But, you know, you wonder if some people got hit on, I don't know if they're stops. Like, I don't trade this thing, so I'm not even sure how they trade when they're not publicly traded on an exchange. But anyways, Ethereum went from $300 down to $13 and then back up to $280. Things happen just when there's, you know, ill liquidity and there's, you know, a couple big sellers come in, no orders there, and boom, you know, you see the thing just collapse. And I just don't know if some people like it, you know, stopped out, if they're buying this thing on leverage or not, because, man, that would be ugly yesterday.
I am texting Jeff Goldman right now to see if maybe we can get him in for a second to comment on that, because I know he's active in the Ethereum. He uses that as a hedge, I think, against his Bitcoin position. So certainly hope he was short the Ethereum on that. I'll see if I can get a hold of him.
Ace saying don't bash cryptocurrencies. I don't think I was bashing it there. Apologies if anybody's taking, you know, offense to it. I don't know anything. I don't trade these things. It's not for me. I'm just saying there's high risk when something can go from $300 down to $13. So, you know, that's why if it's on a public exchange, you have more orders, you can get more liquidity. But these things, you know, trade all over the place there. And sometimes funny things happen. And obviously in this case, went from $300 to $13. Sounds like some people lost some money.
Hey, also, do we have any day trader? If anybody actually trades these in the chat, could you just throw in some comments? It'd be nice to see if any of our traders are trying to pull the trigger.
Yeah, let us know if you're trading this kind of stuff, these Bitcoins and stuff. And, you know, we've had Jeff Goldman on there, and obviously he talked about trading the Bitcoin. But, you know, I don't know anybody on my desk that's trading Ethereum there. So if you are trading it, let us know, you know, and let us know if you were participating somewhat yesterday in the wild volatility, because not only it went from 313, it was down 15% on the day too. So, you know, it was already down and then, you know, it washed out obviously and got crazy for a few minutes or at least a few seconds there. But, you know, it came back. So, you know, these things are what they are. I don't understand them. That's why, you know, it's beyond, I've said multiple times, I don't get how you value them. You know, I think it's just kind of digits, it's numbers. So, you know, and I can't rationalize how to actually come up with a value for the thing, I'm not going to participate. You know me, I'm a value investor. If you've been listening to this
right
for a long time, it's not my cup of tea.
Jeff said that he was short, but he didn't have any bids out. It was just too quick.
I'm wondering even if you have bids out, though, because it trades like on multiple like places. So did it just crash on like the one place, or, you know, was it crashing on all the exchanges? That's, or I don't even know if you can call them exchanges. I don't know what you call them, but, in any regard here. I don't know if it just crashed in one place or if it crashed on multiple spots, because Bitcoin like trades all over the place too, and then they try to consolidate the price. But it's weird, man, when there's no public exchange like that's a central location for trading this thing. So anyways, maybe we'll bring Jeff back on. Maybe we can talk about this.
Yeah,
so.
I'm texting him. I'm see if I can get him back on here.
All right, well, in the meantime, let's talk about American Airlines, because we got some news on that this morning, and you can see the chart right there. Maybe a massive bid or investment in the company by Qatar Air, $81 million or a 10% stake. $808 million would be about a 10% stake, and Qatar Air looking to maybe take a stake in American Airlines.
Big pop here, 5.3%. We're talking a stock taking out or at least getting close to its high of the move there. It was 4 points off its high of the move in the last week and a half. It's getting right back up there right now. It's a sudden windfall here, Joel, for shareholders there, up over 5% in the pre-market.
Yeah, you know how skeptical I am of these things, and don't play my skepticism out so well. Like when GE went up over 29, actually filled that gap yesterday. So big move. I mean, you are knocking on the – what was the recent high of the move here? Recent high of the move was 51.87. Where are we stopping here? Pre-market action. High is 51.39. So, you know, maybe keep an eye out for that high, 51.87. That's not the old time that high, though. American Airlines put a triple top in levels above this in 06, 07 at the $62.50 area. And then we also got back over 55, 56.05. You hit that level in March of 2015. So lower oil prices, something like this, good news for the airlines.
I mean, that's the main thing. I think you need to talk a driver for the airlines. You can just look, you know, and oil has been killed here for the last 2 years. And I don't think it's coincidental if you look at the last 2 years of chart on AAL or look at a chart of, you know, LUV or look at a chart. They're all, you know, straight up here in the last year and a half. So weak oil prices definitely help the airlines. Just talking, you know, we had that news, not only AAL popping, we've got LUV trading up 2.5% in the pre-market. We've got UAL trading up 1.3%. We got Alaska Air, ALK trading up over 1% here. So all the airlines look like they're getting a lift.
Matty G had his weekly American Airline calls. They were essentially worthless yesterday. I don't know if you have an account where you can trade against that position in the pre-market here. But, man, if this thing opens up at 51, 2 days of premium in them, you might be able, you know, off the open, get a $1.20, $1.30 out of those. Way to go, Matty G.
Chef asking us about AMD. I don't know. Oh, lost on this one. Obviously, I kick myself every time I do the show here and we have to talk about AMD. Because I talked about buying this thing under $11 so many times. I never did. Anyways, now $14.24. I mean, it's gone. I mean, I missed the trade. I'll just say I missed this. This train has left the station. It's a five-day hell of a run here for AMD. I don't know where it stops. It's got the momentum behind it now. All I know is I've never made money chasing stocks. I'm not going to chase this train now. I'll wait for maybe to have a pullback here sometime.
All right. Well, it traded yesterday pretty technically. It got through that level I was talking about at the 1375 area. That was not after going down to 1313 first. So closed at 1398. And I'll just call this relentless buyers. I mean, I just am watching this thing trade. 1.5 million shares have already traded, just lifting offers here. We're not quite at the high of the move, but if you want some potential resistance, is what we get paid to do here. You have a quad of highs at the 1470 level from March 31st until April 5th. That's where your four highs were. Pre-market high, not quite there yet, 1437. Wouldn't surprise to see it there. That's not even the high of the move in AMD. High of the move is 15.55. That was back in February.
And we might as well look at its sister-in-law or brother-in-law, NVIDIA, NVDA, which has been on a pretty good tear here too, but nothing like the AMD. I think AMD is kind of playing catch-up because NVIDIA was hot there for a while, and now AMD, although, you know, NVIDIA, nothing to shrug off. It's up about 15 points in the last 4 days, so it's been a pretty good run here for NVIDIA. I wonder if Luft covered.
I was thinking about the same. I mean, when he made that call, I was like, man, I mean, he makes a lot of good calls. I'm like, sometimes I try and participate, but the only way to play those left calls, the only way to play them is if you got it on when he comes out and then you cover, because it's just
it's so fast.
I hope he.
I mean, if you're an algo or you know, if you're a high frequency news reader, you can do it too. I mean, even intraday. I mean, I guess if you're right on it, you're on it. You know, in a few seconds, you probably got a few seconds. You probably got to hit it at least a handle down, but you probably had, you know, a minute maybe even, you know, right on. If you were right all over that Citron tweet, but I mean, the bottom just falls out of the thing. It's so fast.
What about value? Any value in Intel that got hit yesterday, Dennis? I mean,
I'm thinking that too. You know, like this is the one thing is NVIDIA and, you know, AMD. It used to be Intel. I remember everything was about Intel chips. And I guess, you know, maybe Ace can enlighten us there. He follows this industry or he follows, you know, at least the chip makers a little bit closer here. But, you know, like Intel was the place to go. Now nobody talks about Intel. It's all NVIDIA. It's all AMD. I wonder if eventually money doesn't start to come into something like an Intel. I mean, there that is a value stock. I mean, it's got a dividend, 3.15%. Now, is it necessarily going to, you know, lose a lot of market share to maybe AMD and NVIDIA and some of these other chips? It probably already has. I mean, that's maybe why it's not taking off. I do not own shares of Intel. I owned it for a long time. I don't know. I'm torn here. I probably just don't follow the industry close enough on a fundamental basis to make that call to come in here and buy Intel.
All right. We have Spice asking about ESPR. I believe that's Esperion Therapeutics. Is that right? Dennis, I don't see any news on this here in my Benzinga Pro, just that there was some movement in it. You seen
anything?
I'll
just tell you the biotech.
Biotech.
Like it, and we haven't talked about it yet. Maybe we should give it 5 minutes here because the biotechs have just been on a complete tear in the last few days. And now you're starting to see what I always call comb the ditches. Well, stocks haven't gone yet. Which stocks haven't gone yet? Those were the ones that were actually starting to catch a bid yesterday as well. You saw stocks like Esperion all of a sudden, you know, just catch a bid. So, you know, you've got, you know, a lot of stocks that have been. Celgene, I believe, made actually close to an all-time high yesterday. And we know some of the main ones there, like we've been talking about the Bluebird Bios and the Kite Pharmas. And, you know, the other one was the other one that we were talking the last couple of days that just took off.
Regeneron?
That one too, REGN, then CLVS. I mean, they've been monsters. I mean, CLVS, Clovis Oncology, was $60 4 days ago. Now it had good numbers, but it continues to move higher. You know, you got a gap and go on your situation here on CLVS. And Bluebird Bio was the same thing. It had the good information. Boom, gapped up that one day. I mean, it just continues to climb. This was $80 3 weeks ago. It's 120 here now. Man, there's been huge moves here in the biotechs, and now they're looking around what hasn't gone in biotech yet, you know, and any drug, you know, really any drug stocks, even the big stodgy ones like Pfizer have been catching a bid here now. Merck, you know, getting bid up here. Lilly, you know, even actually going up for once, which hasn't, you know, really been performing that well as of late. Amgen had a huge day yesterday. Amgen was up over $5. Even Gilead, there you go. The dog of all the biotechs is up 4 points here in 3 days. Gilead.
All right, another 12 points. You'll be even on that one, Dennis. But
I know, like, I probably sell this rally. Stuck in the value trap, Gilead. Value investing sometimes doesn't work.
I blinked at 300 in the IBB, and that's all it took was a blink. Go it on. Did it, yeah. It went through it. It closed at it. I mean, unless you were really quick on the hop. On Monday, because you, or actually Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Monday, if you could have got in at the close is when it closed just right at 300, didn't even give you a shot on Tuesday or Wednesday, unless you were in there close on the open or prone to chasing. I do have a number here and it just doesn't seem right, but I did the math a few times. You had all time high at 400, right? And then you had the low of the move at 240, 160-point move. Add 80 to that, 320. That's your 50% retracement of this.
You're talking the 2.5-year sell-off that we had.
Yeah. That'd be a target, a soft target here. But now I'm going to have to adjust my strategy here on the IBB. Hope that it finds a top here and then has some kind of retracement. But, man, I don't know if I'm going to. The trade was, man, that was a heatless trade. Those are the kind I like. When that thing blew through 300, finally, and look how many times it did it on the monthlies. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times it flirted with that area. But bona fide breakout there in the IBB. Congrats to anyone that caught that.
Celgene's an interesting one too. 140.72, so you're now $7 off the all-time high. So, you know, it's on its way though. Big moves here. I mean, now, again, same story. You're coming in here now buying them. I feel like you're late to the party. You know, I think the party started, you know, a week and a half ago there. And it seems like when these things go on 4 or 5, 6 day tears, sure, they can continue, but the risk is so much higher than it was 4 or 5 days ago. So I've never made money. I've always talked, you know, given the analogy of, you know, I like to look for setups. I like to hop on trains that are still at the station. When I hop on a moving train, I often fall under the tracks, just like Joel was saying with CSX. So, you know, it's always the setups there. I wait for the consolidation period. So maybe you have a big move, and then you have like a week or two pause digesting the move. That's when I strike. You know, so I'm always waiting for the train to be back at the station or at least at a station, as opposed to jumping on a moving train and falling under the tracks and getting, you know, murdered. So... So that's, you know, my analogy with trading. It's always worked for me. You know, I've obviously been in the business 18 years, made money every year of my 18 professional trading career. So that's what's worked for me. I mean, if you jump on moving trains, you've always had a lot of luck doing it. Continue to do it. I've always lost money when I've done that.
Just going back to the irrational exuberance saying there, Spice said that he or she
Alan
came.
Alan Greenspan.
And here's, you want to hear my quick irrational exuberance story?
Sure.
I was working at Oldie on the Oldie desk at that time. And back then, even the market, this was, you know, during the dot-com bubble, and the market was just going straight up. And I would just say that this is irrational, you know, especially if I was short a stock. This is irrational exuberance. And I, you know, and everyone used to chuckle every time I did it. And this one guy, Johnny, I can't think of what his last name was, though. You know, I said it one time and he goes, Joel, how did you come up with that saying? And like the whole desk looked at him and said, Joel didn't come up with that saying.
Stole it from Alan Greenspan.
Yeah, he made that comment during a televised speech on December.
Like 1990. Do you know when it was?
Yeah, during a televised speech on December 5th, 1996.
I was going to guess 96. I would have been right there.
Yeah. Yeah, so he attributed that quote. I wish I could think of his last name. If there's any oldie desk traders in there,
for coming up with that.
Exactly. So that's my irrational exuberant story. All right, we got 3 minutes till our first guest and only guest of the day come on, and he's a good one. He's Gil Morales of the Gilmore Report. So do we got some more earnings to cover?
Well, I wanted to bring up Disney here. I haven't had a chance here. Thankfulness was reaching out to me on StockTwits yesterday saying she really wanted to get her technical thoughts here on the House of Mouse, and we haven't talked about it for about a week here. Joel's good at the technical, so I'm going to give you the stage on DIS.
Oh, man. Trying to find the bottom here at the 104 area. We talked about that on yesterday's show. There were a couple lows, 104.08, that was your initial low on June 9th, and then you had a couple other dips on Tuesday and Wednesday under there, you know, 40 cents below. But if you're an institution and you're looking to pick up 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 million of Disney, you're not going to do it all in one day, 2 days, or 3 days. So still, that 104 area has a lot of significance to me. We're trading up 18 cents here at 104.98. So if you want to try and get in, you want to try and do a swing trade on it, I think, you know, give yourself some room. I wouldn't want to be in this if 103.54 is taken out, but you could tell buyers have stepped up that at two different times. Let's just look at it a little bit longer term here. If you're looking for from that October low of 90.32 up to the high at 116, so that's a 26-point move, 13. Boy, that doesn't come in right, does it? 16, oh, that's 24. You got a ways to go for your 50% retracement, but right now for a short-term swing trade, I think that 104 area is something that you can lean on. Dennis, you got any thoughts on the issue?
I'm torn on Disney. I think, you know, the ESPN concerns, you know, do I like the stock long term? Maybe. I don't feel like it's cheap here, though, either. Like, my value stock's like about 2-3% dividends, too. 1.49% isn't much on Disney. I mean, it's had, you know, it's been a good stock for a long, long time. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, it's had a pretty incredible run from 2012. We were $40 in 2012, $120 here now. You can say, oh, yeah, well, you know, financial crisis hit it a bit. But, yeah, but it's been a pretty impressive run here. And they've got some issues. You know, they do have some issues with ESPN. They do have some other underlying issues there. Big media company, but social media is obviously coming into play there too. So, you know what? I think I'm just hands off on Disney.
All right, let's take a break and get our guest, Gil Morales of the Gilmore Report. Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel. We are joined by Gil Morales. He's the author of The Gilmore Report and Managing Director of Mocha Investors. Gil, how you doing on this Thursday morning?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. A lot of interesting things going on in the market here as we are just hanging out by all-time highs, but really not pulling back. But you made an interesting comment just before we brought you on. You said, you know, you're looking at stuff and you're looking both ways. Now, I'm sure you have different portfolios that you trade. Are you talking now just about your swing trading, your intraday trading portfolio, or are you talking about your long-term big money where you're actually, you know, putting shorts in a long-term portfolio?
Well, the only thing I own long-term is gold, which I bought in year 2000 when it was trading under 300. So the only account I trade is my own trading account. So I don't distinguish between long-term, short-term, intraday, or whatever. I'm just out to make money each and every day any way I can. And in this market, I think you have to be fairly opportunistic and looking at patterns that don't exactly fit what the consensus is among those who adhere to technical analysis 101. I use a lot of what I call ugly duckling type setups. There's stocks that look pretty ugly, but they turn around. I'll give you some examples that we've seen over the last few weeks, or actually over the last few days since we had the big tech wreck. You look at Facebook, got pretty ugly along the 50-day, but came up and rallied back up to the highs. You saw Nvidia got whacked on some heavy volume on June 9th on the tech wreck sell-off day, and has drifted back up to the highs. So when things get kicked around in this market, that seems to create opportunities. And if you're bold enough and you have reference points where you can enter the stocks at minimal risk, in other words, you're near a level of support that you can use as a tight stop, you can take some shots. And surprisingly, a lot of these rebound trades, they do pretty well. In fact, a lot of them do a lot better than buying standard issue breakouts. So that's kind of what I've been focused on over the last few days. And we've seen a few of those pan out, even among, say, the video gamers like Electronic Arts and Activision. So I'm looking right now at Take-Two is the third one of those three musketeers. And that's a stock that just undercut a low in the pattern. And if you look at the pattern, it looks like an L. But you will have seen the same thing in EA and ATVI, and this is what I call a Louis formation, where it forms an L and it looks like a bear flag. But what it's doing within the bear flag is it undercuts a prior low within that flag. So when that happens, I will buy the stock coming back up through the low. So if you look at a chart of Take-Two, for example, you'll notice that yesterday it undercut the low of 5 days ago, which was 72.53. So once it comes back above that low yesterday, because we hit a low of 72.36, when it comes back above it, I'll buy it there and use that as my stop. So it's very tight. And what I'm looking for this thing is to do is pull what I call the Louis. The L pattern becomes a U, hence the term Louis that's above right now. But yeah, it's the other part of investing. You got to have a sense of humor and be creative about it. You know, got to make it fun, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop doing it, you know. My wife still wonders why I don't just retire and sit on the beach all day instead of knocking my head against the market every day. But that's part of the fun. Anyways. I figure if I stop trading, I'd probably just die. Anyway, so I'll take
don't do that, Gil. Don't stop that.
Well, that's why I'm going to keep trading. So, so I'll take this trade here, and if it blows back below 73, low is 72.56 low, I'm out. So the risk from here, we closed yesterday at 73.05, is less than 1%. So I'm looking also for it because there's sort of a cousin stock theory here. I'm looking for it to push back above the 20-day. And kind of pull what EA and ATVI did. So another one I'm looking at in that vein is Netflix. Now, I have a theory, and I'm going to say it's probably not that new or innovative, but the idea is that these social media companies are going to evolve into, or social networking, social media, whatever, are going to evolve into media content companies. So, you know, Snapchat the other day announced a deal with Time Warner, where Time Warner is going to be creating movies, Snap shows for Snapchat. So we see Snapchat going from this little communication app that teenagers tend to use. I know my kids, both my teenage kids, use it extensively. And they're going to start having movies. So, you know, you're seeing the same thing. I think Facebook is moving that way. When I go to my Twitter page these days, I see in the lower left-hand corner, there's this live video thing going on. And I'm not sure what that is, but I always shut it off. Maybe someday I'll actually look at it. But I think that there's this whole trend towards companies that were mostly social media and social media devices, like Apple, for example, that their phones are used mostly as social media tools, and you see all the teenagers, of course, all staring at their iPhones all day long. But I think there's a possibility that Apple or even Facebook could buy Netflix. And so Netflix, if you look at the pattern, is looking very similar to something like a Take-Two. In other words, it's sitting just below its 50-day moving average. And it undercut the low in that pattern 5 days ago, and it's rallied back up. So what I'm looking for this to do is if it can hold the 50-day line and push above the 20-day exponential, I think at 156.45, I'm long. So I actually have a little bit of it here, but I got a tight stop on it at the lows of yesterday, which is 152.26. So if this pushes up through the 20-day exponential moving average, then I think we're in business for a possible L formation that turns into a U and hence becomes the proverbial Louis pattern. So, and then finally, just in case things go awry here, which is always a possibility, because I think the market's in a little bit of a tenuous position here. Yesterday you had the Dow and the S&P selling off pretty good. The Russell was down as well. But the NASDAQ was being led mostly by a narrow rally in the NDX stocks, the big NASDAQ 100 names, while financials were getting hit. And you also had the Chinese names all moving because the news that MSCI was going to include China A shares in their emerging market index. And so that set all those things to the upside. And that seemed to lead a very narrow rally because breadth was pretty negative. So I've got one eye on the downside here. And one of my favorite trades is volatility, going long volatility via the UVXY. And I will trade that intraday using a 5-minute chart, but I have been able to catch some pretty good moves on it, especially, say, on the tech wreck of a couple of weeks ago. And then we had a sell-off in the market, I think. When was that last sell-off? Back in May. I think that was on May 17th. Is that correct? Yeah. And these are one-day, you know, breaks, but you get some nice movement in the UVXY. And if you're long some names, if you have a small position in the UVXY, you get a lot of leverage if things go nasty on you. So right. I call it a Brill Cream trade. You remember Brill Cream? Maybe I'm dating myself. When I was a little
kid, I do not remember Brill Cream, but
Brill Cream is a little hair a hair product. It used to come in a what looked like a toothpaste tube, and it looked like toothpaste. It was white and greasy, and I remember my mom used to rub it in my hair when I was 5 years old before and comb my hair before she sent me off to kindergarten. But the old ads for that product were that a little dab will do ya, and my mom used to put in a lot more than a little dab. But in any case. all you need is a small position in something like the UVXY, and it works as a hedge for those days where the market, you know, the bottom drops out of the market just out of nowhere, and you're sitting there wondering what the hell's going on, you know. So that one is another one I watch, and I'm actually long just a little bit here using a stop at around 960. So, but I think with the VIX at all-time lows, your risk-reward is skewed heavily to the upside if we run into any kind of trouble. And I think there's a lot of potential out there for news risk with North Korea and the Trump agenda and what gets passed or doesn't get passed. So there's always a potential for these spin-outs in the market, and so that's how I'm approaching it. And yesterday, some of these Chinese names also, I thought that was probably a one-day wonder, and I put some shorts out in some of those names, and they did come in a little bit, and this morning they're coming in a lot more, so that may be over with. But, you know, this is a choppy market, and we may remain choppy throughout the summer, and so I'm basically going to be swing trading it, right? I mean, do you see anything that strikes you as a brilliant long-term trade? I think a lot of the longer-term or, say, intermediate-term trades, like, say, in Tesla, in Facebook, in Netflix, Amazon, all of those have kind of run a long way. So we're either going to, I think, chop around sideways or maybe pull back, in which case I might want to be looking at taking some shorts or being long volatility.
Gail, general question, you know, with a lot of your strategies and the tighter stops there, in a choppy market, though, how are you not just getting stopped out of everything? That's just my question when you're in a choppy market.
Well, you can be stopped out, but I'm flexible. See, one of the beautiful things about the stock market is that what you sold this morning, you can buy back by lunchtime. And if it doesn't work, you can sell it before the market closes. And, you know, this isn't artwork. It isn't real estate. You know, you don't have to go to an auction or you don't have to wait 2 months before you close the deal. You can exit stocks if they don't work, but then you can lay back and see if they set up again and then come back into them. And so when I'm taking this approach, I have to be persistent. And I'm not afraid of, you know, coming in back and forth a couple of times and being stopped out with a tiny, tiny loss, you know, 0.5%, if I can keep it down to that, and then come right back in, because eventually I want to catch a sharp move to the upside, and that's the whole point. So, yeah, in a choppy market, you can get stopped out, but I don't think that means that you run away from a trade just because you got stopped out the first time. I can name many, many times over my 26-year career where I've been stopped out two or three times before finally catching the big move. And probably the best example of that is buying Apple back in summer of 2004. And I was in and out of the stock around the 36 area, and then finally it gapped up to about 42, 43 after earnings, and I just went heavy long the stock and had about 500,000 shares as it eventually ended up going over 100. So it's, and I remember just getting stopped out like two or three or four times on that back and forth. You know, I'd buy 50,000 shares and I get stopped down and then come back in and buy it and get stopped down. And that happened two or three times. And finally, when the thing launched, I just piled in. I think I bought 250,000 shares the first day it gapped up to 43, and then boom, that thing was out of there. So you got to be persistent, especially in a choppy market. You have to be persistent. I think you have to be brave. You have to be opportunistic. And you got to be a little crazy. So that helps, too.
What about that size, like your slippage, you know, when you're talking that kind
of
size?
Well, I play with big stocks. If I have a rule. I won't take an initial position that I can't get with more than three clicks. So, you know, something like an Apple is very liquid. You can come in, boom, 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 and buy in 20,000 share blocks. And it doesn't budge. Netflix, you can come in and buy. It's a bigger stock, $150. So you can come in and buy, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 shares, boom, 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 and you're in pretty quick. So yeah, I won't go after tiny, thin names. So
yeah, because you'd push the price too much.
Yeah, and then something even like a Snap I like. I mean, I've noticed I can buy 20,000 shares of Snap, boom, like that, in a Snap. Use the pun. I'm sorry, the pun.
All right, can we ask you about a few issues before we let you go? Gil Morales of the Gilmore Report giving us some excellent commentary. Way up in the chat, Juniper, JNPR, is this chart meeting any of your criteria here for a potential long entry? JNPR.
Well, I'll tell you, this is actually one of these formations where, and in fact, the whole group, you got Finisar, Ciena, Lumentum, even Ocular, or not Ocular, but Claro, OCLRs, is these are all trying to set up again and go. And what I notice here is that Juniper undercut the low of 5 days ago, which is 28.44, and it closed yesterday at 28.86. So I would look at that as what I call an undercut and rally setup, which is a Wyckoffian spring, for those of you familiar with Richard Wyckoff's work. And so I would go long that using the stop at 28.44. So that's, what is that, like 2%? Risk there. That actually looks like it might want to turn back to the upside. So I might take a shot. I was looking at some of these last night. I like the Finisar is another one that looks interesting here. And I bought a little bit of that yesterday. And this one may have a shot too. If it can clear the 50-day, then you're in business. But that looks like a possible nibble here. But of course, you want to keep a tight stop.
Gil, how about Costco here? Amazon taking over the world, Whole Foods buy, and they whack this Costco here from 180 down to 160. I'm looking at this thing. It filled the gap that it had before earnings. I mean, I don't know if you need to talk fundamentals on this or the technicals here. I know I drop $400 or $500 every time I go there. Any comments on Costco?
Well, my wife was just there yesterday, and I think she buys half the store every time she goes because I got to go out and help her haul everything back in, and it's some big stuff. But I think, well, you know, I don't understand. This one got hit with Walmart, okay, because Amazon buys Whole Foods. Okay, great. So Amazon wants to get in on the low-margin grocery business too. Lovely. And I guess to the extent that it you know, shows that Amazon is the big juggernaut in the retail space, I don't think it knocks out Costco. I mean, my wife isn't going to stop going to Costco and start getting 200 roll toilet paper boxes, you know, from Amazon because it's just too big a package to fit through the door, okay? So every more have sitting out in the door. You open the front door and walk out and trip over the thing. So I think from here it looks like the volume has dried up at the 200-day line. I think it looks ready for a rebound. This might be good for a trade up to maybe the lows of the falling window, which would be around 170.60 from here. So that's a rebound trade.
You got a lot of terms there that I like that I haven't heard before. Gil, we're getting a lot of positive feedback here in the chat from your analysis. And I know it's been a while since we have you on, but seems like the chat and Dennis and I would like to get you on again a little bit sooner. I know you're out there on the West Coast, but up trading anyway. So really great feedback, and we really appreciate it, long-term and short-term perspective on the markets. Gil Morales, author of The Gilmore Report and Managing Director of Mocha Investors. Thanks, Gil. We're going to be getting you back on sooner than you expect.
All right. Sounds good to me. I'm in.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Gil.
Did you notice that almost every position that he talked about and what he was taking, he had a criteria for getting into the position on the upside, and he had a stop, whether it was a mental or physical stop, where he was going to exit the trade, and he had the expectations of where he wanted to take a target. So he's not disappointed. When he goes into these trades, and also the thing that he talked about, which is a little bit more difficult in the days, with the liquidity and stuff, but getting in and getting out. I mean, how many times did you do that when, you know, things traded in the 16th, you got in, it didn't look good, you got out, you could still get the same position on, and you kept working it, you know, and then if it, you know, you spent low commissions and you took small losses, the third time, fourth time it worked, then it, you know, it made up for that. So several good points there. Dennis, would you like to make any comments?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, that's from, you know, my 18 years of, you know, professional experience, and, you know, we've met a lot of traders through Bright Trading and a lot of traders, you know, even through Benzinga and through the pre-market show. The one thing I've noticed is, you know, every single trader, you know, the one character trait that every successful one seems to have is the discipline. And they have the setups, you know, and they have that contingency plan for when the trade goes wrong, they know where they're getting out, or at least they're going to be trying to get out at that point. So, you know, knowing that, you know, whether it's a mental stop, whether it's a physical stop, whether it's just, you know, you're risking 2%, you're going to go 6%, you know, whatever it is, they always have the discipline to get out of the losing trades when they're going against them. Mine is a lot tighter because I'm a day trader. You know, I can't risk something like 2% or 1%. You know, usually I don't even like the trades going red because I'm going with the momentum. I want the stock going my direction right away. But, you know, that's the one thing I've noticed with, you know, all the successful traders I've met throughout my career is they've had the discipline. And as soon as, you know, you drop that discipline, as soon as you say, oh, it'll come back, those, you know, yeah, sure, maybe 90% of the time it will come back. But that 10% of the time that it doesn't, that's the time that, you know, that trade becomes, you know, a longer term pain in your portfolio and can actually just start eroding, you know, a lot of the good that you're doing with other trades, and in some cases can blow out your account. So, you know, you've got to have a contingency plan for the losers. You've got to have the discipline to get out when the trade didn't work. And if you have that, you're going to be a step up on a lot of other people, because a lot of people out there will not sell at a loss. And that's the best thing you can do, is take your losers.
Ah, boy, I wanted to ask him about the gold. Did you hear that comment at the top? I asked him about his different portfolios, and he said the only thing he has in his long-term portfolio is gold, which he bought at 300. I just wanted to get the rest. I mean, it's a quadruple here at 1250 area, but that was interesting. I don't think
it's just a hedge against life. You know, if you have the gold, you know, he's making money consistently there. While if, you know, whatever fiat currency goes to the, you know, goes to the show, he's got a hedge against, you know, that too. So he's thought of everything, you know, because obviously he's probably made a lot of money over the years, got a lot of paper money there. So he's got a hedge against that too. Gil thought of everything.
An update from Jeff. He said that crash in Ethereum was only on the GDAX. It was only
one. So it was only on one. Are they called exchanges? I guess they are.
Yeah,
it was only on the one exchange or whatever, so, which makes sense to me too. So it didn't crash on all exchanges, just crashed on the one exchange. So if you had orders probably sitting out there on that one exchange, maybe you could have bought at a pretty good price. I'm not sure how exactly it works though. So, you know, that's why I like to trade things on public exchanges.
All right, have we done any ratings yet this morning?
We got a lot to get in 5 minutes. So quick ratings, we'll just fly through, you know, the main ones. Abercrombie, Fitch, ANF getting upgraded at Wunderlich here. Stock is trading a bit up in the pre-market, hasn't traded here this morning. The Splunkster, SPLK, getting upgraded at Guggenheim. Valero getting upgraded at Jefferies. So those are kind of the main ones. There was a few other smaller ones there, but those are the ones that were jumping out to me.
Southwest also at Argus.
Oh, Southwest upgrade Argus?
Yep. Southwest at Argus, CarMax at RBC, Valero at Jefferies, and that's all as far as upgrades go. Downgrades, I just saw CarMax got upgraded and downgraded today. So
who downgraded?
Susquehanna.
Okay. Often you see that. I think CarMax had earnings yesterday. Wasn't it earnings yesterday?
Yeah,
so often you see analysts piping up, and they just have opposite opinions of the report. So that's, you know, when you do see that usually happen is usually after some type of major event where you got multiple analysts commenting after some type of newsworthy fundamental event. And, you know, they just had opposite opinions on the event.
And then the only other downgrade that caught my eye was Cinemark Holdings, CNK, at Credit Suisse.
All right. Just real quickly, Abercrombie & Fitch, just a trading range here over the last 5-6 sessions. 12 to 12.50. I'm not chasing it over 12.50 and not shorting it under 12. The Splunkster, taking a look at that stock. It's trading up $1.07 at 58.20 near the highs of the pre-market session. You're just getting into a vacuum area. If you could clear 58.51 here, man, oh, man, there was a big drop in this thing from when it swooned down from a 61.42 close down to 58.27. So I'd be a little careful there getting crazy short in the Splunkster. Here we are, 3 minutes to go. Dennis, any notable imbalances? I'm going to have to hit my machine here because the S&Ps keep showing 21, 24, 30. They're not moving.
The S&Ps aren't moving, and the imbalances are mixed. When you see a day that you're down a point, up a point, they're always mixed. But individual stocks can move, and I do have a couple of interesting ones here. Let's go to CAG. That actually has, I'm looking at this morning, 67,000 to sell. Has not traded here yet, but is offered down the pre-market. Somebody banking that sell imbalance, opening sell imbalance, is going to take the price a little bit lower here today. I will say, you know, I look at that support level down 37.11 if it really went to free fall. But these food stocks, sometimes, you know, there'll be buyers that'll come in at the last minute and offset some of these huge imbalances. Nike, which has been, you know, got a little bit of love there from, you know, potential Goldman report with Amazon yesterday, does have a 72,000 share buy imbalance here today that could push it higher. FedEx, which was a wild child yesterday. And I mean, it was up on the earnings report. Then it gave it all back. Then it went hard red. Then it bounced all the way back and went hard green. So it was all over the place, FedEx, people trying to figure out whether they liked it or hated it. They ended up liking it at the end. Well, this morning, somebody doesn't like it again. Stock is trading down $1.20, and it's got an 85,000 share sell and balance here this morning. So FDX, that's a pretty big sell and balance for a $210 stock. Coca-Cola, 58,000 to sell. Let's just look here at the Bobster. Nothing on Baba yet. They haven't posted it yet. I'll look at Snap. SNAP, 56,000 to buy. I'll tell you, man, I was trying to buy that Snap yesterday. I did buy it once. I actually got stopped out on it. But, you know, I was like, I tried to buy at 17.05 and it got down to 17.13. Didn't quite get to my price at the open. And then I had a little run up there. Came back in. I tried and it just kind of chopped around all day, just around 17 and a quarter. But there's definitely a buyer down there in the lower 17s. Now they look like they stepped up to 17 and a quarter yesterday. It seemed to be a hard bottom. So, you know, whether that's because of the IPO price or that's underwriters, I don't know who it is, but somebody is in accumulation mode at 17 on Snap.
All right, Spencer, you want to wrap up today's show and let us know what's on the docket for tomorrow?
On the docket for Friday, we've got Frank Holmes. He has written a book about gold. He runs the Jets ETF, has also just launched a new ETF, a new gold ETF, USGI. I don't know if it has launched or is launching, but he'll be on the show to talk about gold and the airliners tomorrow. So that's Frank Holmes. And that's it for the show today. So hope you enjoyed our chat with Gil Morales. You can find his information at gilmoreport.com, G-I-L-M-O, M as in Macy's, O-report.com. That's for Gil Morales. And that's it. So please remember, you can catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. We're also on YouTube at Benzinga TV, on Facebook, and on Twitter. I want to remind you about Benzinga Pro. Trade faster, trade smarter with Benzinga Pro. Have a good rest of your day, everyone. We'll see you folks on Friday for our final show of the week.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.